We are uncomfortable as this war spirals out of control. Welcome in to the show. We're so glad to have all of you here. We've got a very special guest on the show today.
That's right. You probably have seen him. Professor Jiang is coming to us from China, which is very exciting. He is the person who predicted that President Trump would win re-election, start a war with Iran, and that it would go badly for the United States. So he's batting 1,000. We're really excited to talk to him and talk about how, not only how do we see this, but what do we do, you know, with as Americans, what do we do as citizens of the world? It's really frustrating. So we're excited to talk about
it. Yeah. I mean, and what are his latest predictions on this now that we're about 3.5 weeks or so into this conflict? Where do things go from here? What is the plan to actually end this war now that thousands of Americans are being deployed to the region? Like, we're told no boots on the ground, and here we go, boots on the ground. So we'll talk about all of that. So we got a lot to get to today. Thank you guys so much for subscribing and being a part of our community here. We really appreciate it. So we're going to get to Professor Zhang in just a moment here. But first,
we want to tell you about our friends over at Rumble Wallet, because you may have seen the conversation happening online lately that censorship is back. It's happening everywhere. Platforms are controlling narratives and pushing the stuff they want us to see. We need to fight back. Well, Rumble is the only company that has stood the test of time and deserves our support. They've been supporting Redacted for years, and we are so grateful for that relationship. Now, on one side, Rumble is challenging censorship with platforms like us, but they also have something that will give us protection from big banks shutting us off, canceling our accounts, freezing our cards. That's why they launched Rumble Wallet, which is a wallet that no one can cancel and that supporters can use instantly to tip creators like Redacted without making any middleman enriched by taking cuts. With Rumble Wallet, you control the money, not a bank, not a government, not a tech company, and not even Rumble can touch it. It's yours and only yours. You can buy and save digital assets like Bitcoin and Tether Gold, and now the new USAT, which is a regulated stablecoin, all in one place. Tether Gold is real gold on the blockchain with ownership of physical gold bars. USAT keeps your money steady against inflation, no banks needed. So show some support for Rumble and other creators with using the tip button. You can go to wallet.rumble.com. See all their offerings there for a more secure banking and crypto investment solution. Download Rumble Wallet today. Open an account. Step away from big banks for good. Wallet.rumble.com or search Rumble Wallet in the App Store.
Well, the war against Iran has begun to spiral out of control, it would seem. Over the past few days, of course, we saw President Trump announcing that talks with Iran have gone very well after a massive bombing campaign that was targeting their energy infrastructure. But then Iran responds and says that, no, there were no talks with Trump, and they claim that he retreated from the talks. But meanwhile, boots on the ground, thousands of Marines being deployed to the region, this seems to be spiraling out of control. Professor Jiang, on his Substack, his Predictive History Substack, wrote this: the U.S.-Iran endgame. We are but 3 weeks into this senseless and pointless war, and it seems certain now that the Americans will commit boots on the ground. The Pentagon is deploying an additional 5,000 troops to the Middle East, and Netanyahu has reappeared to say that the war must be won on the ground, not from the air. Trump has asked for $200 billion from Congress, signaling that he intends to fight a long war. Well, we're thrilled now to have here on the show Professor Jiang. He's the author of Predictive History on Substack. Welcome to Redacted. Great to have you here.
Thanks so much, Clayton. I love your show.
Well, it's our pleasure to have you here. So, you know, those are your words just a few days ago on your Substack, as you describe it, the senseless war and committing U.S. boots on the ground. It seems that that part of the story is ramping up while we get this rhetoric from the Trump administration that talks have gone great. We're about to reopen the Strait of Hormuz. Nothing to see here. Don't worry about your energy prices. Where do things stand right now, in your estimation?
Right. So Trump, these past 3 weeks have been over the plate. Every single day, he comes up with a new narrative. But the reality on the ground is that this war is following an escalation ladder. And it seems that day by day, the escalation is getting worse and worse. So there's fear now that the Israelis will strike the power plants of Iran, which is targeting now the civilian infrastructure of Iran. And Iran has stated that in public, that if their power plants are attacked, then they will respond by targeting the energy infrastructure of the GCC and possibly the desalination plants as well. And so right now, the GCC, especially the UAE, they're facing an existential crisis. And the UAE has doubled down and said that they themselves want to remove the Iranian threat once and for all. And the Israelis are completely committed to the fight. So it seems like all the different actors want this to escalate.
Now, you've become a bit of an internet celebrity because you have this ability to see things at a higher level than the rest of us. So while the rest of us are like, oh, he said this, maybe this is happening. And what about this? What do we think about this? You use game theory to understand it at a broader context, which I have found both comforting and terrifying at the same time. Can you respond to how the internet has responded to you, you know, on a personal level, but then also how are people actually then making choices in their lives based on what you say? Because I know for me, it's like, okay, we better, you know, think about what our plans are in our family. We better think about what is our emergency response. And so can you talk about some of the response to you and then also what's practical for the rest of us that are just watching this war in horror?
Yeah, sure. So for the past 2 years, I've been developing a new system of predictive modeling, where I take game theory and I make predictions about how world events will turn out. And by making these predictions, I can better refine my game theory model. And so 2 years ago, I made three predictions. The first prediction is that Trump would win the 2024 general election, become the 47th president of the United States. Second prediction is that he would initiate a war with Iran. And the third prediction is that the United States would lose this war, and ultimately this would reshape the global order. So I did this as a thought experiment. I'm just a high school teacher in China. I'm trying to get my students excited in learning. I'm trying to increase their critical thinking skills. And I myself am curious about how the world works. So I developed this model, and to my surprise, it's actually panned out. And so I've received a lot of attention online. And there are two types of attention. The first is that there seems to be a coordinated smear campaign against me, mainly by individuals who believe that I am maybe attacking Israel or threatening the Zionist project. And so there have been quite a number of very influential media figures that have come out and attacked me. I won't name their names, but everyone knows who they are. And it seems coordinated because it's the same talking points where, you know, they, you know, try to emulate me or try to, satirize me by having a blackboard and then writing down some silly things and saying, hi, there you go. So they're trying to satirize my teaching style. And it all happened at once, so it seems coordinated to me. It's the same talking point where they think that I make up this stuff on the fly, okay? So that is the smear campaign. But there's also an organic anger directed at me. I think a lot of it is fear about how this war will turn out, and anger at the fact that I'm sort of using a global tragedy, to make a name for myself. And I'm sympathetic towards these people. I mean, there are quite a few people who I deeply admire, people like David Icke. You know, I've been following David Icke for a number of years, and he's been a deep inspiration to me. But he himself has criticized me for maybe being part of the deep state or being part of a conspiracy in order to push an agenda. Again, I'm just a random high school teacher in Beijing. I think a lot of it just comes from the confusion of how I was able to blow up so fast online. I myself am also confused by the attention I've been getting. You know, when I first started this YouTube channel, it was mainly to try to build a online community where I can exchange my ideas with others. And my wife and I were really optimistic about the potential for the YouTube channel. We were really thinking, like, you mean maybe in 2 months' time, or 2 years' time, we would have 5,000 members. And that'd be it, 5,000 members. Now it's over 2 million. So it's I'm just flabbergasted by the attention. And I And I know that a lot of people who've been working in the space for a number of years, trying to educate and enlighten the public, people like David Icke, but also people like Jay Dyer, they might be confused as to how this happened. I myself am confused as well. So I'm just trying to make sense of what's happening.
But
so
it doesn't.
To be clear, you're not part of the deep state. You're not part of some. I've seen some people being critical, saying that he's part of the Chinese Communist Party, and therefore he has an agenda. He's not being critical of China. He's being critical of Israel. What do you say to that?
Okay, first of all, I've been very mute about China. And the reality is that I live and work in China. If I were to say anything offensive about China, then my school would get into a lot of trouble. And quite frankly, they might have to fire me. I have a family in China. I have three young kids. So I choose not to say anything offensive about China. Quite honestly, if I had nice things to say about China, I would say them because it would make me look good in China. And quite honestly, I could make quite a lot of money for myself if I became a fanboy of the Communist Party in China and parroted, Communist Party talking points around the world. So, but I don't want to do that because I don't want to be a propagandist. I want to be an educator. So I've chosen to remain silent about China. So I think like the criticism of me about being mute, my criticism of the Chinese Communist Party is correct, but it's just because I'm working in the reality that is China. Okay. Yeah.
Well, thank you for that. And yeah, I wanted to thank you for Natalie for bringing that up. And we wanted to address that kind of off the top, because I know you've been getting hit really hard with certain people on social media. So thank you for that. Can we talk about your predictive model, though? I want to get back to this war and what you're seeing play out here. I mean, forget like internet personalities, you know, criticize. I want to talk about there's thousands of people being killed in a war that is reshaping the global world order right now.
And if I may, I'd like to add this because we also are parents of three. And when I watch your content, it seems very much not about what you want to happen, because we also have three kids. This is not the world we want to leave them. You've said many times, I hope that I'm wrong. So I don't hear in your predictions a personal preference or a deep satisfaction of evil or anything. I mean, I feel kindred of the way we report news. We hate, we don't like this. We don't want it to be this way. But if you could tell us, give it to us straight how you see it, and we'll put aside how we feel about what we want to happen.
Yeah, so thank you so much for that, Natalie. So, you know, when my predictions turned out correct, you know, on February 28th, the Americans and Israelis attacked Tehran and this launched the war that we are in now. I couldn't sleep for 2 weeks. You know, I mean, my prediction had panned out, but I was angry. I was frustrated. I was anxious because, as you point out, I have three kids and I want a better future for them. But as a parent, I also have a responsibility to be truthful to them and to work hard to build a better future. So my hope is that if this predictive model is correct and people start to adopt this predictive model, then that gives us more agency over human events. And this allows our children to build a better world. And that's what drives me, my love for my children, my desire to bequest to them a better world that they have agency over. So, you know, we have 8 billion people in this world and most people don't know what's going on. And they choose to put their head in the sand. And what I'm trying to do, my YouTube channel, is trying to say to people that you do matter. And your choices will affect the outcome of the world. And so we need to educate ourselves. We need to focus on what we can do. And just by doing these two simple things, we can change the world for the better. So that's what motivates me. So as for my predictive model, I use three mechanisms, okay? So the first is game theory. And the idea of game theory is, I assume that you have these different players in the world. So the United States, Israel, Iran, Saudi Arabia, UAE, and they have different interests and they have different strengths. And they are gonna look for an optimal strategy in order to advance their interests. So as we know, a lot of what's happening in the Middle East is driven by Israel's desire to achieve the Greater Israel Project. That, you know, right now Israel is being dominated by religious fanatics who believe that it is their God-given right to control all the land from the Nile to the Euphrates. And that's why we're seeing this war in the Middle East. And because of Israel's aggression, Iran has to respond a certain way. the United States is drawn into this war, and the United States is drawn in, and the United States has to respond in a certain way. So that's game theory. The problem with game theory is often you're not allowed information, or you don't have access to information of the key players. You don't know how they're thinking. You just make assumptions. So you need other mechanisms in order to validate your theory. And these two other mechanisms are historical patterns and eschatology. Okay, historical patterns just means, can we think about previous wars and compare contrast how this war will play out based on previous wars? And so what I've done is I've looked at the Vietnam War. I've looked at the Peloponnesian War, where Athens invaded Sicily. I've looked at the Nazi Germany invasion of Russia. And by looking at these wars, I'm able to figure out how this war might progress. And the third mechanism is eschatology, which is to say that the people involved, whether it's Iranians or the Israelis or the Americans, these are very religious people who believe that they're doing this for God. They're doing this to build a better world. And so once you understand their eschatology, once you understand the religious worldview, you can better understand their motivations and their strategy moving forward. So then you have like three different strands, right? You have game theory, eschatology, and historical patterning. And if you're able to figure out where these three converge together, you are then able to make accurate predictions about how things should progress.
Now, you've said Iran's edge in all of this, I believe, and if I'm misquoting you, please forgive me, is escalation control. Like they, so we're talking about the escalation ladder. Maybe you can lay that out, because I think it's very, when people see that ladder, the escalation war ladder, it's, we've seen it all before. We've seen it play out in Iraq. We've seen it play out in Afghanistan. And I saw a meme this weekend where someone said, Clayton, you know, the problem with three-day wars is that they tend to last 5 years. And I thought that just really hit it. So anyway, you make the point that Iran has been able to control the escalation control. What exactly does that mean in terms of the United States and Israel's plan to actually escalate this war?
Right. So the escalation ladder is just the idea that once you start a fight, it develops its own momentum, its own logic. You can't really stop it. So no two guys go into an argument thinking that they will actually exchange punches. But what happens is they argue, then they get emotional, they push each other, then they hit each other, pull a knife, then they pull a gun. Okay. So this is the idea of escalation ladder. Now, according to this theory, the United States and Israel have escalation dominance because they can move up far higher than Iran in the escalation ladder because the United States and Israel have access to nuclear weapons, right? And Iran doesn't. So in theory, the United States and Israel have more options than Iran. But if you've ever been in a fight, what you recognize is that the weaker opponent is forced to be more strategic, to be much more flexible, to have more control over the situation. So I did a lot of Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu before. And in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, it's all about maintaining calm, maintaining control. And if you are able to maintain calm control, you can even defeat a bigger opponent who is stronger and heavier than you are. So what we're seeing in this war is the Iranians are able to calibrate their strategy far more effectively than the Israelis and the Americans. The Americans use something called a shock and awe strategy, where they go and blow things up, right? So the Israelis, if they want to assassinate the Ayatollah Khamenei or Ali Larijani, what they do is blow up 10 blocks, okay? It's devastating, but it's effective, it's blunt. The Iranians, on the other hand, are able to calibrate their strikes. So like if they're able to target perhaps a military base in Baran, they're able to target Mossad Center in Israel. And so by doing that, what Iran is able to demonstrate is confidence in its arsenal. It's able to maintain diplomacy, political diplomacy, as well as global public opinion. They're also able to divide and conquer the allies, right? So they don't want the entire GCC teaming up with Israel and the United States. So they just want to target specific areas. So for example, military bases, they don't actually want to target energy infrastructure because then that might cause Saudi Arabia to declare war on Iran. So what we're seeing for these past 3 weeks is, whereas Israel and the United States are choosing a blunt instrument, shock and awe, just blow things up, the Iranians are being very strategic. They're being very calculating. Another example, of course, is the Strait of Hormuz, where Iran is able to determine who's able to pass through the Strait of Hormuz, therefore not impacting the global economy as much as they could.
Now, what's frustrating for me is that the United States and Israel can escalate in these horrific ways, and there's no international consequences. So they can destroy Gaza en masse. They can hit a school of young girls, and there's no consequence for it. So as an American, it's infuriating because there should be some consequences so that we never do this again. And the world is letting us, and I'm very confused why that is. So can you explain that variable in your game theory?
Right. So there is actually a major consequence. A major consequence is the morale of your population, which affects your will to fight, right? So if people believe that it is a good cause, they are willing to commit themselves to the fight. They're willing to make the sacrifices necessary to win the war, right? So what we're seeing is, look, these soldiers, these American soldiers, are not enthusiastic about this war. There were these American commanders who told their soldiers that this war against Iran is because God ordained Trump to achieve the second coming of Jesus. And what you had was dozens of complaints filed against these commanders. You're seeing fires break out in Gerald R. Ford supercarrier, right? So Gerald R. Ford supercarrier came into the theater hoping to have a mutual impact, and then a fire broke out, and then the Gerald Ford is now forced to retreat back into the Mediterranean. And apparently, the rumor is the Gerald Ford is now out of commission for the next 2 years because the damage was so extensive. And the theory is there's an investigation as to whether the sailors deliberately set fire in a laundry room to decapitate the supercarrier. Okay, so you're seeing low morale among American soldiers. First day of the war, what happened? All the American soldiers changed into civilian clothes and then fled into hotels. Popular opinion in America, only about 40% of the population support this war. And this is the lowest support in the past 20, 30 years. So the consequence of not having a strategy, of not having a purpose, of not having a rationale means low morale among your population. And this is important because eventually, if Trump wants to win this war, he needs a ground invasion. And already we're seeing 5,000 additional troops being deployed to the Persian Gulf. And a lot of people assume they're planning an amphibious landing somewhere, possibly Kirk Island, but also possibly a naval base in the south east of Iran. Once you commit the ground invasion, then you're going to have a popular uprising throughout America. You know, once you have this social media footage of Marines getting killed in Iran for no particular reason, I mean, Americans don't want to die for Epstein or Israel, right? So there's a tremendous consequence to what the Americans are doing right now.
Let's talk about this air power, because you've been critical of, I think you've referred to it as the inverted pyramid, where the United States really relies on air power more than anything, whether it's drones, whether it's air, with fighter jets. But Iran, as Netanyahu has said, will need to have boots on the ground in order for there to be an effective regime change. So they seem at really at cross purposes. And then you mentioned 5,000 Marines being, there's a really massive buildup now of U.S. forces heading to that region. It seems inevitable. I hate to say it, but it seems inevitable.
Right. So if you want to win this war, what you do is you spend 2 years to stage 2 million troops around Iran, okay? So you have 500,000 troops in Pakistan ready to assault from the southeast corner. You have another million in Iraq coming from that border. And then you have another 500,000 maybe in Azerbaijan coming in from the north, okay? You need about 2 years because you need to stockpile ammunition, to train the soldiers, to have the order of battle ready. Okay, if you want to win the war, you actually do it that way. The problem is that America has not fought a real war ever since Vietnam. 2003, the war against Iraq was not a real war because Saddam Hussein didn't have any air defense. He basically gave up even before the war began because he assumed that Americans would not be stupid enough to invade Iraq because that would make Iran the regional power, right? Because Iraq was a balance to Iran. So Saddam Hussein miscalculated. So the problem with the American military machine is that it's run by the military-industrial complex. And this is something that Eisenhower warned about in his farewell speech, right, where he said that there's now this massive military bureaucracy that is independent of oversight, that does not factor in the best interests of the nation, that doesn't really care about popular opinion. And all they're interested in is creating as many advanced weapon systems as possible in order to basically steal from the American taxpayer. And then starting these wars for no particular reason. You know, Julian Assange said it best, where the point of the war on terror is not to have successful wars, but to have never-ending wars where the military-industrial complex can steal as much as it wants from the American taxpayer. And so what we're seeing in Iran is the failure of the military-industrial complex to prepare for a modern war where your opponent is willing to fight back asymmetrically, right? So we see these air defense systems, the Patriot system, the THAAD system, they don't really work. Even Israel's vaunted Iron Dome system, Sling David, they don't work either. The Iranians now have are now able to strike at will against Tel Aviv. So air defense doesn't really work. Then you have these super carriers, Abraham Lincoln, Gerald Ford. Gerald Ford cost $13 billion. And when they came into theater, they recognized that, wow, we could be hit by drones and missiles. So they ran away. They're not actually in this war. I mean, they're just flexing. And right. then you have these jets, like the F-35. The F-35 costs $100 million each. It took about 26 years to develop. And it had stealth technology. This is the most advanced jet in the entire world.
Yeah, it's, we were told it was unhittable. Unhittable.
Yes, exactly. And the Iranians hit them with like pretty limited radar. So it just shows you the corruption of the military-industrial complex right now in the United States. And it shows you how the United States is not ready for this war at all.
Let's take a quick break. And then I want to ask you more about game theory in specific, your prediction about the United States eventually losing this war. So we'll be back in just a moment.
So look, I'm 49 years old. I can tell you firsthand that drinking just hits differently now. You know, back in the day when you're in your 20s, maybe you could bounce back a little easier, go out with friends and go to work at 8 in the morning. Now, after a couple of drinks, you can throw off your sleep and you leave feeling less than 100% the next morning. That's exactly how it happens, even as you're older. You can even see it in your sleep tracker or your readiness score. That's why Cheers Restore can help you in this regard. Cheers Restore is a dual action after alcohol aid designed to support your brain and your liver after you have a few drinks. And that's what we like about it, because alcohol affects more than just hydration. So this is something that you have to, you know, you keep in your medicine cabinet, you're out with friends, you have just a few drinks. This isn't about binge drinking. This is about having just like two drinks maybe, and you're like a normal adult, and you just take three capsules after your last drink or before bed, and it'll change your next morning, absolutely for sure. Cheers has been featured on Shark Tank. It's sold in over 30,000 stores. They've sold over 50 million doses. So same night out, way better morning with Cheers. For a limited time, our listeners are getting 20% off their entire order at cheershealth.com/redacted. That's cheershealth.com/redacted. And after you purchase, make sure you tell them our show sent you.
We also want to tell you about our friends over at Kickoff, because it's tax season. Most likely you're having to report the interest that you paid on your loans to the IRS. Well, did you know that you could pay less interest if you have a better credit score? That's where Kickoff comes in. They help you to boost your credit with low monthly fees. They also have a rent reporting feature where they can help boost your credit score with the rent you already pay. With credit over 600, you can grow an average of 86 points on Kickoff just by paying on time. They have transparent, affordable plans starting at just $5 a month, no hidden fees, zero interest. Kickoff helps you score big when it comes to credit, because when you want to finance something, a home, a line of credit, a car, you have to already have that robust credit score, not start working on it. So do your credit credit score workout with Kickoff. Go to GetKickoff, that's KIKOFF.com/redacted. You can get your first month for only $1. They are the number one credit building app out there. So again, go to GetKickoff.com/redacted. You must sign up via GetKickoff.com/redacted to activate the offer. It applies only to new Kickoff customers, first month only and subject to approval. Offer subject to change. New car financing savings based on the 2025 Chevy Silverado with a $10,000 down payment and a five-year financing for subprime borrowers versus those over 600. Actual savings and financing factors may vary. The source is Experian. Again, average first-year credit score impact of 86 points between August 24 and 25 for Kickoff credit account users who started with a score below 600 and who paid on time, had no delinquencies or collections added to their credit profile during that period. Late payments may negatively affect your credit score. Individual results may vary. One more time, that's getkickoff.com/redacted. Okay, we're back with Professor Jang. He's the author of Predictive History on Substack and a YouTuber with 2 million subscribers in a short order because of his ability to recall public events before they happen. I guess recall is not the right word. So some things that he had said in 2024 is that Trump will win the election, he will start a war with Iran, and that the United States would lose that war. So the war that President Trump said would be easily won in the days leading up to it has not proven to be so. So Professor Jang, thank you. Welcome back. I want to ask you about this prediction. Did you think, when you predicted the war with Iran, first of all, can you tell us why you saw that coming when so many allies of the Trump campaign, such as Tulsi Gabbard, were against the war with Iran, and why you think the United States would lose it, why you knew that before the president ever did?
Right. So the key piece of evidence is 20 years ago, about 2002, the American military, the Pentagon, ran a war game called the Millennium Challenge, And the idea is to look at how America could defeat Iran in a war. And so what they did was they asked this admiral to fight on the side of Iranians and asked this admiral to figure out a strategy that could defeat the invincible American empire. And so in the first iteration, what the admiral did was he used drone swarms, okay? So these are cheap, you know, drones that attack all at once, and it overwhelms the defense systems of this of the carriers and the destroyers. And in this iteration, the Iranians won. And so they ran this multiple times until finally what happened was the Pentagon basically restricted the strategy of the Iranians, basically saying you can't use drones, you can't fight back, you can't cheat, you can't fight asymmetrically. And then in that iteration, in the final iteration, the Pentagon won, okay? So this shows you two things. The first thing is that the Pentagon is not ready to fight a war asymmetrically. It doesn't have the creativity, it doesn't have the resilience, it doesn't have the flexibility. The second thing is the Pentagon has become this bureaucracy where it doesn't really want bad news. It doesn't want to admit its limitations. And so it's gonna shape reality in a way that conforms to its expectations. And so that's one piece of evidence. Another piece of evidence is Operation Prosperity Guardian, where the Houthis, in response to the genocide in Gaza, was disrupting Red Sea shipping. And so the Americans sent this massive naval armada to stop the Houthis, right? I'm sure you've seen this video footage of like this massive armada. And it didn't do anything. Yeah. They kept on hitting the Houthis. The Houthis hid in their mountains, and the Houthis refused to surrender. And the Americans didn't know what to do because they're so used to being able to scare their opponents, to bribe them, to intimidate them, to co-opt them, to assassinate them. And the Houthis were, you know, refused to surrender. They were not afraid to die, and they could not be blackmailed. And so what happened was the Americans were forced to retreat. Now, I saw a YouTube video where these different admirals got together and discussed Operation Prosperity Guardian. And basically, to put it in very simply, what they said was, we lost against the Houthis, we made a lot of mistakes, but we don't know how to beat them. But if you ask us to do it again, we'll use the same strategy because we don't know what else to do.
Right.
Okay? That's basically the Pentagon. And yeah. So we're seeing this play out right now in Iran, where these strategies don't really work. These past 3 weeks have shown shock and awe doesn't really work, but they don't know what else to do, so they keep on doing it. And now what they're doing is they're thinking about sending the Marines in for an amphibious landing, because that's just what you do, even though every military analyst you talk to will tell you that this is a suicide mission. But unfortunately, once you commit to a war, the war achieves a momentum and a logic of its own. And this is what happened in Vietnam, where in 1965, 1966, the Americans basically knew they could not defeat this insurgency in South Vietnam, but they didn't want to give up because of credibility or face, right? They don't want to look bad in front of the world. And so we're seeing a similar situation where if the Americans were to retreat, the entire world would just laugh at Trump. I mean, the entire world would no longer see America as a empire, as invincible. And the Pentagon could not really countenance this possibility. So what they'll do is they'll double down. It's very much like going to a casino, you know, losing $1 million, and then you're stuck. It's a sunk cost fallacy where, you know, you either stay and try to gamble back your money, or you go home and like have to tell your wife what happened, right?
Can I just stay on this issue of morale before you change the subject? One more question about that. Because it feels like it doesn't matter that we're all so upset about the war, but you're saying it does. But on the other side, many Arab countries do have something to fight for, specifically the Palestinians, specifically the Iranians. Living as a Palestinian in Gaza under constant surveillance, where the Israelis can kill you and rape you at will, lock you in Gaza, you're waiting decades for a right of return and living in utter poverty and misery. To them, the stakes are utterly existential. So anyone aligned with them has nothing to lose. So they do have moral support, whereas the rest of us don't. Can you explain how that plays into their... Because if they lose, they're all wiped out. There's nothing. I mean, I just finished Ramzi Baroud's book over the weekend, and the way that the Palestinians in Gaza have been living for decades is horrific, and those are stories that are not told to us, but it's very motivating to them.
Yeah, look, I think that the Iranians have extremely high morale, and the reason why is they think they are on the side of truth. You know, what people forget about the Iranians is that these are the Persians, and the Persians have around for about 3,000 years. And the Persians were originally Zoroastrians. And Zoroastrians were the first eschatological people in that they believe that they are here to serve the will of God and to bring about a just world. And so they believe, like, if you live a life of truth, if you fight for what is good, then you make the world a better place. And, you know, and that's why the Iranians refuse to do a preemptive strike. You know, there are a lot of people telling the Iranians, you know what, the Americans are going to come anyway, the Israelis are going to come anyway, take the initiative, you know, set the contours of this war. But the Persian people are like, no, we have to live the truth. We refuse to submit to the lie. So if they attack us, we'll fight back. But we will never, ever be the aggressor. We will never, ever choose the path of violence. We choose the path of right. And, you know, when you do that, when you submit yourself to the will of God, when you commit yourself to righteousness, there's an inner fire in you that allows you to surmount all obstacles, that gives you faith in the most darkest times. And you can see that in Iran, where, you know, they're being devastated. In the first week, they really struck an oil depot in Tehran, and so the entire sky was black. But inside, there's a light shining in the Iranian people. And that's what happens when you fight a war for a good cause as opposed to a bad cause.
You brought up David Icke earlier, and, you know, we're big fans of David Icke here on this show. Yep. He's been a guest a number of times. One of the things that he's been saying is that this Iranian war, this collapse of Iran, et cetera, has been planned for a long time. I mean, this is many, many decades. As you pointed out, the war games that they were playing at the Pentagon many decades ago. But this is all part of a plan, a broader plan. And his argument is, of course, that Trump is just like a pawn in this cultist's chessboard, ushering in this new era of AI and control, and we will lose more rights. I mean, I just did a video this weekend about this very same thing, this idea that they will take away our control. They will take away our ability to transact. AI will have, you know, this biological connection now to the human brain. They are issuing in this, ushering in this new era of control, just like the Patriot Act. So we can get all into the finite details about air power and this drone struck this particular oil plant and this, but really it's part of a larger game. Do you see it that way?
Yeah, I mean, I completely agree with David Icke's assessment. I think this is the future we're heading towards. My main issue with David Icke is that he thinks this is all deliberate. This is all scripted. This is all planned. And it's true that certain people have planned this out. These are occultists. These are people who have been studying Kabbalah and meditating on the state of the world for many, many decades. And they have foreseen these events turn out. But to say that this is all scripted really doesn't take into account the agency of certain individuals. So to say like this will ultimately lead to a certain series of events, I agree with. I think this will lead to digital currency. I think this will lead to an AI surveillance control grid. I think this will lead to a collapse of the global economy. I think this will lead to a reset. I think this will lead to the Greater Israel Project. So on where the world is heading, I agree with David Icke, but I will also point out that according to game theory, we cannot discount certain players in this game. So for example, Donald Trump and Vladimir Putin are major players in this game, and their interests are not actually aligned with the interests of the global elite. Yes, the global elite has a certain plan for us, and this war is meant to achieve this plan. But Vladimir Putin and Donald Trump may have other plans as well. And what we're seeing is really the script being played out, but also a response to this script. So I don't think things will work out as seamlessly as people predict.
Yeah, no, I see what you mean. And I think you're spot on with that, because there are individual players in this that have agency and can manipulate. There is a broader framework, whatever you want to call it, this 2030 agenda, more broadly, yep. Control grid, et cetera, digital currency. They want massive control of all of us. And really, COVID-19, of course, was the trial run to see how far they could push us into these lockdowns. Do you believe that we are heading into a massive energy lockdown, the likes of which we've never seen before, even eclipsing what we saw with COVID-19? You're already seeing, obviously, in Southeast Asia. You talked about Thailand in your interview with Tucker. Thailand already on fuel restrictions and telling people to stay home. They've, I think, declared a state of emergency. Vietnam and other countries as well. So do you think we are heading for a massive lockdown?
I actually think the real issue that the global elite need to resolve is the financial system. Meaning that over the past 10, 20 years, they printed too much money. And there are too many individuals who are millionaires. And this is causing a lot of problems for the global economy. And so what you need to do is basically destroy a lot of this wealth. And there are different options that you can use to destroy this wealth. A civil war in America would do it. A false flag attack on financial data centers where a lot of wealth is wiped out. Will also work. And then you can blame this false flag on Iran and therefore muster public support for a national draft. So I think like their priority is not necessarily to lock the country down, but to try to destroy as much excess wealth as possible from the system in order to better regulate individuals.
That's terrifying. I mean, yeah, maybe not the lockdown in the COVID sense of the term, but locking us down financially.
Yes.
By wiping out huge stores of value. That's absolutely terrifying.
Yes. I do want to talk about these dark forces a little bit more, because the Epstein class is clearly a real thing. And how much of the Epstein class do you think is just that they're satanic perverts doing things for their own satisfaction, and that it does promote a war? Is it a chess piece to move around? I have you as someone who eats babies, therefore you must give me the war that I wanted. What do you think of that? Because you talk a lot about the Epstein class. Was it real in the way that most of us see now from the public documents? What have we not seen? And how is it operating still? Because it clearly didn't die with Epstein.
Yeah, so the Epstein class, I think people focus on the wrong thing, which is they focus on Pizzagate, right? They focus on the idea that Epstein was talking about, like, beef jerky, pizza, and grape soda. And that's what captivates the people's imagination. But I think that's not really the point, okay? And what I mean by that is we think that, you know, Jeffrey Epstein was running a blackmail operation and using Epstein Island in order to gather compromising material on powerful individuals like Bill Clinton and Bill Gates. I think Epstein Island was just a weekend getaway. It's just what he did for fun. Mm-hmm. You actually look at the Epstein files and you track what he was doing. Well, he was basically an operative for the global elite and trying to manufacture geopolitical events in a certain way that most benefited the global elite, right? So he was involved in the great financial crisis of 2008. He was probably involved in 9/11, even though we don't have the emails that confirm this. But a lot of, if you just connect the dots, it suggests that he was in a certain way involved in 9/11. You know, he was a neighbor to Howard Lutnick in Manhattan, right? So, and they were neighbors and their numbers were 9 and 11. So is this all coincidence? You know, I don't know. But so what I will say is this, if you just look at the Epstein files and you try to reconstruct how he was making his money and what his real job was, well, he was mainly engaged in arms trafficking, money laundering, and geopolitical manipulation. And so he was basically an operative. And the money was just something that he did. It was not a concern. I mean, think about this where Bill Gates and Reid Hoffman, these are billionaires, when they were asked, why do you associate with Epstein? And their response was, well, we wanted money from him, right? So these are billionaires trying to beg Epstein for money. So something's wrong with our current conception of the world. And so what I will say is there is a transnational elite that is above the nation state, that is able to manipulate the nation state. And this transnational elite is able to manipulate geopolitical events in a certain way that maximizes their benefit, okay? And we can speculate as to who this transnational elite are. But I will say that there are an alliance between three forces, okay? These three forces are transnational capital, City of London, Wall Street, secret societies, Jesuits, Shabbat Lubavitch, Sabbatine Francis, Freemasons, Rosicrucians. And then you have these elite families called the 13 families that apparently control the world, okay? So I would say Epstein was one of these people from an elite family. And if you look at his emails, what it will say is there were three major Jewish families in Europe. They were the Rothschilds, the Epsteins, and the Gutmans. And he told Peter Thiel, I represent the Rothschilds. And what he's really saying is, I represent a collection of transnational capital that is able to influence geopolitical events. So I think that is what the Epstein class is. The Epstein class are parasites on the nation state, and they manipulate geopolitical events in a certain way that most benefits them.
You know, Joe Kent last week, I think it was last week now, time is flying so quickly, resigned from the Trump administration, basically trying to prevent this war in Iran. He says that everybody, all of the intelligence agencies have confirmed that Iran did not have nuclear ambitions. They were not building nuclear weapons. President Trump, just on Monday, comes out and says, you know, the whole reason we're having these negotiations, no more wars, and we will not allow Iran to get those nuclear weapons. So there seems to be this massive disconnect. Joe Kent posted this, and I just want to read it to you. He said, step one in de-escalation must be restraining the Israelis. Otherwise, all efforts to negotiate will follow this pattern. Well, President of the United States will announce a de-escalation, and then Israel launches some major attack on oil infrastructure or desalinization plants. And that's what we've seen now repeatedly in these past few weeks, is that the United States says one thing, and then the Israelis like go around quickly and launch some sort of attack on Iranian infrastructure, like you mentioned, the oil and the black cloud hanging over Tehran. So do you agree with Joe Kent that the only way to de-escalate is to rein in the Israelis?
I completely agree with this assessment. So in the early days of the war, on the first day, a drone struck the Saudi Aramco facility in Saudi Arabia. And we assumed at first that it was Iranians, but later it was reported that actually this drone was coming in from Lebanon. So were the Iranians launch a drone from Lebanon, right? So people speculate that this was an Israeli false flag to force Saudi Arabia into the war as quickly as possible. Tucker Carlson himself reported that he was told by confidential sources that the Qataris had arrested two Mossad agents who they suspected of sabotaging, of doing a sabotage operation in Qatar. Later, the Qataris denied this, but, you know, this fits very much the Mossad MO. Recently, there was a long-range missile strike on Diego Garcia. And at first, people were bewildered because we just assumed this was beyond the range of Iran's ballistic missiles. But now it's been reported that actually these missiles were fired from an Israeli submarine. So it is in the best interest, according to game theory, for Israel to drag this war out as much as possible, and to drag in as many players as possible. Ideally, Israel also wants to drag in Saudi Arabia, UAE, Turkey, and Pakistan as well, because from their perspective, this war is the best opportunity they have to achieve the Greater Israel Project. If they destroy the GCC, if they destroy Iran, then they are the only regional power left standing, and that is their ambition. But also, sorry.
No, go ahead.
But I will also add some nuance to this, where the Iranians do not actually want this war to end as well, because for the past few decades they've been under tremendous sanctions, and they want sanctions relief, and they recognize that if they are to rebuild and modernize and forever protect themselves, they need to accomplish certain things. The first thing they need to do is establish control over the Strait of Hormuz. And that would be the main economic lifeline, where they can charge a 10% toll on any passage through the Strait of Hormuz. So that's number one. Number two is they need to eliminate the American military presence in the GCC. So they need to America out of the Middle East. And the third thing they need to do is establish credibility, meaning they need to do enough damage to Israel so that Israel will be forced to be respectful towards Iran. And then Israel and Iran can come to a peace treaty once the United States leaves. So that's really the long-term ambition of Iran as well.
Is that doable? That Israel will ever submit to the greater good of other countries?
Right. So if you look at the Greater Israel Project, it's very clear that it extends from the Nile to the Euphrates. It does not include Persia. Israel is not actually interested in Persia. So according to game theory, what Israel wants to do is knock out both the GCC and the United States. So people don't really understand this, where people think that Israel's main objective is to knock out Iran. No, actually, Israel sees America as the main threat. There's a video, a viral video of Netanyahu, and a journalist asked him, "What book are you reading right now, Mr. Netanyahu?" Netanyahu responds, "I'm reading a book called Rome versus the Jews by Barry Strauss. And the book is about these three wars fought between the Romans and the Jews in the first century. And these were like brutal wars that wiped out most of the Jewish population in Europe at that time." And so the journalist then asked Netanyahu, "Why are you reading this book?" And Netanyahu's response was, "Well, it didn't work out great for us the first time." Okay, so this is how the Israelis think. They see, they understand, like, their main competitor in the Middle East is actually not Iran, but actually the United States. So this war is meant to actually destroy the American military presence in the Middle East.
It's very much like Game of Thrones. I keep mentioning there's this Littlefinger character who is befriending these leaders and then leading them and advising them into their own self-destruction. If you know Game of Thrones, that would make sense. And so I guess my question is, and it's not, you know, the people of Israel, it's the leaders of Israel who want this. These are, in my estimation, the bad guys. Is there any scenario in your game theory where the bad guys are punished and stop it? I know that's simplistic, but it's like what I pray for.
Look, there's a lot of agency and Donald Trump could have a come to Jesus moment, and he strikes a deal with the Iranians, and he restricts the Israelis, right? So Donald Trump says, for the greater good, I'm going to strike a deal with the GCC and Iran, and we're going to limit Israel. Now, Israel has nuclear weapons, so you can't attack Israel, but what the United States can do is, we're going to pass laws that say you cannot be a dual citizen and sit in the U.S. Congress. You cannot be a dual citizen and work in the national security apparatus of America. And we're not going to sell weapons to Israel, and we're not going to finance the military activities of Israel. I mean, the reality is the Israelis have free health care, and a lot of this is being financed by Americans who do not have free health care, by the way.
Yeah, we know this.
Yeah, exactly. And they have a space program. Like, why are we propping up a country that has a space program?
Right. It's incredibly frustrating because federal workers are not being paid at the airports. We, you know, just traveled this weekend and we walked through, and it's heartbreaking to watch these people go without paychecks and know that we're spending all this money to bomb Iran. It's really hard to take.
So, Professor, we're going to take a quick break, and we're going to come back. We want to ask you about your next big prediction, and also about something you said last week, which is that this war powers we could be entering into with President Trump could even lead to a potential Trump third term. We'll talk about all of that in a moment. But first, today's episode is brought to you by Pocket Hose, the world's number one expandable hose. The brand new Pocket Hose copper head with pocket pivot is a total game changer. I absolutely love it because, you know, the old fashioned hoses always kink up, crease right at the spigot, and water like shoots out of the spigot. I don't know why. It's such a pain in the butt. Anyway, the pocket pivot swivels 360 degrees, so you get full water flow and a whole lot more freedom moving around your yard or around your house. You know, it's been in the 80s. Here in the Denver metro area in Colorado. And so they even opened the pool, getting their yard ready, cleaning out the garage of all the salt and debris from the winter. So getting that hose in the garage to be able to spray it out has been a game changer. And the thing is, when you're done with this hose, it shrinks right back down to pocket size. So you're not out here wrestling with some big bulky hose, trying to coil it up. I also love that it's super lightweight, ultra durable, easy to store, and keep it like in a little bucket like that guy. So after trying the pocket hose, I'm never going back. Watering the yard is just easier with this thing. And for a limited time, our listeners can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with a purchase of any size copperhead hose. Just text the word redacted news to 64,000. So just type in 64,000 into your phone and just type redacted news. And you'll get two free gifts with your purchase. Redacted news. That's all you need to do is type that to 64,000. Message and data rates may apply. See terms for details. All right, we're back with Professor Zhang. And to talk more about his predictions here and as well as possibly a Trump third term. Professor, before we get into the Trump third term piece of this, as you're gaming out this war now and things have changed, I'm sure, since this the first 3.5 weeks of this thing, where are you seeing your predictions pointing over the next month, maybe year or so? Are there any predictions that you'd want to reveal here on our show?
Yeah, so I will say that I think this war is heading in the direction of another Vietnam, meaning that 1965, the Americans sent in about 3,000 Marines in an expeditionary unit to control Dagnan Air Base. And this was a limited operation with a limited military objective. And then like 4 or 5 years later, you have 500,000 troops in Vietnam. And so we can see a similar situation play out in Iran where the Americans deployed the Marines in a limited operation, possibly to secure a coastline, possibly to take Karg Island. We don't know yet. But then this will lead to escalation because of some cost fallacy and mission creep where the military is set up so that it wants to win a war. And once it gets into a fight, it's not going to stop until it wins the war. And that's what happened in Vietnam. So once these troops are sent, no matter what happens, whether or not they are successful in the first strike or not successful, the Pentagon wants to finish the job, basically. And there'll be a lot of pressure from the military on Donald Trump to institute a national draft. And so I think he will have no choice in the matter but institute a national draft, in which case you will have riots throughout America. And they have a plan for that, right? They want to deploy the National Guard across all major American cities by as early as April. And once that is in place, once the National Guard is in place, then Trump can declare the Emergency Powers Act, right? And then he will get his third term, and as well as bypass the midterm elections in November.
So a third term without an election, sort of like Zelensky, basically.
Well, right. I mean, he already has a war without congressional declaration. And so, again, I come back to, we have rules and orders, and all of them are just being steamrolled right now. It doesn't, and you can hear my despair in the fact that it feels like you're not supposed to attack civilian living infrastructure. Oh, we did that. You're not supposed to attack civilians. Yes, we did that. You're not supposed to level a whole society in Gaza. Yeah, we did that too. You're not supposed to have a war without congressional approval. You're not, I don't know what to do here, right? The fact that the rules don't matter, and yet you can still see what's being played out in a game when there's no rules.
Right. So I think it's very worrying that this war was started in a way that was not the way the war started in 2003. So in 2003, the Bush administration spent months rallying public support. They won congressional approval. They spoke before the United Nations and provided specious evidence of weapons of mass destruction, but they provided evidence nonetheless, okay? So the American government in 2003 made tremendous efforts to win over the American public, to seek congressional approval, and to also win public opinion, okay, to speak before the United Nations. None of this is true today. The Trump administration went in, and even today, they have not provided actually a reason why they made the first strike. Trump has said that, well, it was because he was misled by his advisor, Steve Witkoff, Jared Kushner, Peter Hestev. And then Marco Rubio has said that, well, it's because the Israelis were going to attack first, and then the Iranians were going to respond by attacking us, and so we have to preempt the Israelis.
Well,
I mean, you know, I normally wouldn't want to point out the Economist magazine professor. I'm not a fan of that liberal rag normally, but at the airport, just reading the front cover, I think the headline, the front cover of the Economist magazine this past week is "A War with No Plan." And I think you just hit the nail on the head. I mean, what is the plan here? Is there a plan? Do you see that there is an end game? Because people are asking, what's the goal here? Well,
and
we're hearing nuclear, you know, no more nuclear weapons. Well, they never had nuclear weapons. They weren't building nuclear weapons. It's to help the Iranian people. So you help the Iranian people by killing their children and bombing their oil and desalinization infrastructure. Like, none of it makes sense. Do you see any of it making sense?
But let me just point out, having that within weeks of the start of the war is something different. We had to wait years in the Iraq war to get this kind of narrative. We can at least have it from strike one. So there's my, I've been so pessimistic this whole interview, so I wanted to point out that I can see silver linings.
Look, I mean, if you just look at America's history in the Middle East for the past 20 years, what they did in Iraq, what they did in Libya and Syria. I think there is a plan. The plan is to balkanize Iran into ethnic enclaves and destroy Iran's limited water infrastructure, basically destroy the reservoirs, the power plants, and have these different ethnic groups fight over water for the next few decades. It's really to destroy Persia as a civilization. And that's exactly what they did in Iraq. So remember, in 2003, the war was won very quickly. And then Paul Bremer was appointed to oversee the transition. And the second act, okay, the second thing he did was something called the De-Ba'athification Act, which said that if you were a member of the Ba'athist Party, you were not allowed to work in government, you were not allowed to work in the military, you were not allowed to work in the police. The problem with that is that everyone who worked in government, everyone who worked in the military, everyone who worked in the police was a member of the Ba'athist Party. And so with that one order, it destroyed the nation state of Iraq. It destroyed the government of Iraq and its ability to deliver basic services to the Iraqi people. And this led to massive sectarian violence that's still raging today in Iraq. So I think that's the end goal in Iran, to do in Iran what they did in Iraq and Libya and Syria. But they can't come out and say this because the entire world would be disgusted with this plan.
I guess we'll get you out of here on this, Professor. We haven't really talked about the media propaganda piece of all of this, which is really ramped into overdrive. You heard over the past few days, the same publications that were telling us in the Ukraine war that Russia had run out of ballistic missiles is the same media that's now telling us that Iran has run out of ballistic missiles and they are being hindered and they're being shattered. And, you know, this will wrap up very, very soon. How do you, when you analyze the media propaganda arm of all of this, how do you see it unfolding?
Right. So I think you're exactly correct in that the media will just be as propagandistic in this war against Iran as it was against Ukraine. So the problem with this, though, is unfortunately, Washington, D.C. has become an insular bubble. And so if you are negative, if you voice any dissent, if you're critical, like Joe Kent, well, you're pushed out of the bubble very quickly. And so basically everyone in Washington, D.C. is drinking their own Kool-Aid, you know, getting high on their own supply. And this is very problematic because it will lead to bad decision making. And this is what we saw in Ukraine, where it was, I mean, like it was suicidal for Ukraine to launch counteroffensive against a heavily fortified Russian position. And by launching three counteroffensive that led that led nowhere, that accomplished no military objectives, the Ukrainians lost about a million men of fighting age. But unfortunately, because the deep state, because Washington DC is able to control the media narrative, people aren't aware of this. And so this war in Ukraine is dragging on for no particular reason, even though it's led to the destruction of Ukraine as a nation state, and even though this war is not winnable. And we can see a similar situation in Iran, where the war is being lost, where it's clear that the Iranians refuse to give up and they have clear escalation control. But Donald Trump is watching Fox News and he's watching, you know, NBC and CNN and CBS News, and they're telling him exactly what he wants to hear, which is this war is going great. The Iranian people love you. The Iranian people want democratic change. And one more day, and we've got this. The Iranians are so close to collapse, and we just fight on for one more week. We've got this. And then like 5 years later, we're still at this stupid war.
Well, Professor, thank you for like staying awake for us and joining us on this show. I know the time zones are really,
Before we end, I just want to give a quick shout out to Tucker Carlson, okay? Because sure. People don't remember this, but we could have been in this situation in January 2020, because that's when Trump ordered the assassination of General Qasem Soleimani in Baghdad. And this was clearly an act of war. And it seemed as though the Americans were going to follow us up with airstrikes against Iran. So we should have been in this situation in January. But what happened was Tucker Carlson on Fox News, using his huge platform every day, he explained why this war would be a disaster for America. I think he even flew down to Mar-a-Lago to talk to Trump personally, okay? But Tucker Carlson saved us from nuclear war in January 2020. And for that, he was fired from Fox News. And people don't remember what a heroic act that was, because he's the only broadcaster in a major platform that came out to speak out against the war.
At great personal risk. Yes, he continues to do that at great personal risk. So,
yes.
Yeah, and then speaking out against the Ukraine war and the United States involvement in that, that's why, yes, that, and that's why he got fired from Fox News. Clearly, Professor, 100%. One of the few voices on national television who was calling out these neocons and this boondoggle that would have been a disaster for the United States. So thank you for that. Professor, thank you so much for the wacky time zones and burning the midnight oil to be up with us. We really, really appreciate it. Thank you for your incredible work. We want to drive everyone to your Substack and to your YouTube channel. It's remarkable. So thank you so much, Professor. We'd love to have you back. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, no, I love talking to you guys. Yeah, I mean, I would love to come back.
We've been looking forward to it. So yes, open invitation.
Thanks, Professor. Yeah, anytime you're welcome. So thank you so much. Really appreciate it. All right. Thanks, Professor. Wow. Unbelievable. And, you know, a couple of things are just hitting me as I'm sort of digesting this interview. But I think his point on the sunk cost fallacy piece of this is so troubling because it is like Vietnam. You know, it is like Vietnam all over again, this idea that we need to just save face. So we're just trying to save face, but we don't care that thousands of people will die, but we just want to do it to save face so that Trump doesn't look bad or that the Pentagon doesn't look bad.
That the Iraq War was launched to cure Vietnam syndrome. Like, people are upset that we did that 2 decades ago. Let's start another war that we can win, and then we'll be emboldened again, and people will not remember Vietnam syndrome. But what did that do is collectively give us all worse Vietnam syndrome. At least that's what I've got now.
Yeah.
You know, there's no cure for that. The only cure for that is mind your own damn business, which we don't seem able to do.
No, and his other point about the military, I mean, we're just a flexing to have these aircraft carriers that are just sort of sitting there. They're not there for any real power at all, just a flex. And that's exactly what Colonel Douglas McGregor has said, that our military has built for a post-World War II era. So aircraft carriers, and there's a lot of questions, that, like what happened to the USS Gerald Ford? Like, was it actually sabotage internally, or was it actually struck by Iran, which they claim they struck that target? And the United States is not saying a word about it. So did Iran actually strike the USS Gerald Ford? Now it's out of commission for 2 years.
Right.
2 years? The most advanced aircraft carrier in our entire fleet is now sidetracked?
Yes.
2 years?
And the lack of information, the lack of, you know, this playing out on X on our TV screens, it very much feels like, if you've ever read Jean Baudrillard, the Gulf War did not exist. It is being fought in a propagandist way, but real lives are at stake, which is horrid. So anyway, well, that's going to do it for us today. Anything else?
We have a newsletter. Point? Yeah, we'd love for you to check out our daily newsletter. If you go to redacted.inc is the place to go. It's free to sign up. It's delivered to your inbox first thing in the morning. It's a way to stay connected with us because, you know, these platforms, they love to censor us. They love to block us. They love to do all of that. And that way we have a direct line to you. But we provide a great newsletter first thing in the morning so you can read it over your cup of coffee. Read it in about 5 or 10 minutes, covering like the big stories of the day. And all you do is go to redacted.inc, click on the newsletter button at the top. You'll receive a welcome email. It might go to your spam folder, junk folder, so dig for it. You just need to click the link there to confirm that you do want to receive it. Drag it over to your inbox. That way you'll receive it first thing the next morning. So thanks to all of you for subscribing to the channel and being a part of our great community here. We really, really appreciate it. And we'll see you back here tomorrow live at 4 p.m. Eastern Time. Have a great afternoon, everyone.